Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Been debating this issue of health insurance reform for months. The United States Congress has been working on it for the better part of a year. And last week, the final congressional committee involved in shaping legislation completed their proposal and will soon vote on it.
Blue Monday.
It is a blue Monday indeed. Welcome to the Savage Nation. We have an inexperienced ideologue for president. A man who has endangered the United States of America through his inactivity and his overactivity, as well as his hyperactivity. Do you know what's going on around you? Do you have any idea how bad things are that he fires the general in Afghanistan about 6 months ago? He puts in General McChrystal. General McChrystal says, help, we need more troops. He doesn't want to talk to the general. Then he doesn't want to hear from the general. And now the great anti-war Obama, who has never fired a Daisy BB gun, is the commander-in-chief, leaving our men out there to dry without sufficient backup. This is like sending a cop into the most dangerous neighborhood in your city, and when he calls for backup, there's nobody there. Obama is the police chief. Obama should be sending them backup. Instead, he's telling them, we don't know what we're going to do yet. We've got other things to do. We've got other fish to fry. I've got to go to Copenhagen with Oprah Winfrey and try to sell the Olympics. I got to be a lobbyist for a while for my friends in Chicago. So now he comes back, and he gets the loser doctors of America, the Cuban-style doctors, the lowest-ranking doctors, doctors at the bottom of the heap, the non-specialist doctors, the doctors that were shoveled into the medical schools to make it look more like Cuba than America, and they go out there in their white coats, and they tell us, they want health insurance reform, while across the street, the real doctors, the well-educated doctors, the ones who you grew up with, I grew up with, the ones that you entrust your life with, are opposed to the socialized medicine that Obama is trying to push. At the same time, we read today at the top of the Drudge Report, just now, Arab states are launching a secret move with China, Russia, and France behind the scenes. The Arabs moving with China, Russia, and our good friends, the backstabbing yellow-bellied French, to stop using the dollar for oil trading. Are we going to wake up to a dollar that is worthless? With Obama in office, we could wake up to an Obama dollar that is worthless. That's right. Not only has Goldman Sachs destroyed America's currency by stealing billions of dollars, in my opinion, in the form of bailouts, TARP money, you name it, stimulus funds. A lot of it went to their friends on Wall Street. They won't even disclose where it went. We know that the former Treasury Secretary Paulson was put in there by Goldman Sachs. We know that the Treasury Secretary before him was put in there by Goldman Sachs. We know that the current Treasury Secretary is a stooge for Goldman Sachs. And we learned that Goldman Sachs basically has sacked the Treasury. Goldman has sacked the Treasury. And so, rightly so, the Arabs, the Chinese, the Russians, and even the backstabbing French are saying, we don't trust the dollar anymore. Not only is it bad what they did with TARP funds and stimulus funds, but now the college teacher, the would-be Castro, Obama, is trying to force socialized medicine down the throats of every American, a Cuban-style medical system that will cost beyond anyone's imagination. La Raza, for example, the brown supremacist group La Raza. La Raza wants free health care for all illegal aliens. Free health care for all illegal aliens. Now, who is going to pay for it? Do you understand why other nations are necessarily nervous about the state of the dollar? China, Russia, France, Arabs saying we don't want to invest, we don't want the dollar being used for oil trading? Are they wrong when you have an incompetent man like Obama in the White House? A man with training wheels? The first president in modern American history who was in the White House on training wheels. And then we look at Afghanistan. Afghanistan, remember, was the centerpiece of Obama's anti-war campaign. We were in Iraq. It was the wrong war. So Saddam Hussein was not the correct person to attack. We're going to go to Afghanistan. We're going to really clean this up. We're going to get to Afghanistan. We're going to capture Osama bin Laden. Now we see that our men are being fragged in the back by Afghani policemen. That's right. Brave men in the special forces shot while they slept by Afghani policemen who were really, of course, the enemy, the Taliban themselves. And so here we are, having learned nothing from Vietnam all over again. The general wants more troops. The president doesn't know what to do. The so-called allies are really enemies. And here we are. We have OB searching for OB. What do I mean by OB searching for OB? No one has said that yet. Obama, Biden, searching for Osama bin Laden. OB searching for OB. The general says unless they send 40,000 more troops immediately, we're going to have a chaosistan. Nice phrase, chaosistan, but not funny. Obama, Biden creating chaosistan, says General McChrystal. Who are we to believe, General McChrystal or the Marxist college professor from Chicago? Who would you believe, a constitutional law professor who has never been in the military, who has never fired a weapon so far as we know because he's opposed to the Second Amendment? Or would you believe a general, a battle-hardened general? Who are you going to believe? Some other stories on the Savage Nation. Hispanic caucus wants criminal, illegal aliens free to roam the U.S. That's right. You heard it correctly. The so-called Congressional Hispanic Caucus has asked the Obama administration to immediately terminate a program that has identified more than 120,000 illegal aliens in America, many of whom are illegal alien criminals. If that's not bad, it gets worse and worse and worse. I know it's hard to take. I know it's hard to take. It's hard for me to tell you that it's Vietnam all over again, with Afghani police fragging U.S. troops while the Dems are mismanaging the war. It's very hard for me to tell you the news, but that's my job. Oh, I can give you recipes. I can tell you about my trip to Los Angeles, and I will. I can tell you about MichaelSavage.com and read you one horrible story after another. You want a few more? La Raza Prez wants health care reform for illegals. Cuba's lauded health care system is a hoax. Go take a look at the article on my website. You keep hearing, oh, Cuba has a wonderful health care system. Why don't you tell Michael Moore to go have some of his liposuction done down in Havana? Unbelievable to me. 1-800-449-8255, MichaelSavage.com. I will be right back.
Savage.
I mean, it's a horrible picture. The dollar is collapsing. We're losing the war. I have a question for you on the Savage Nation. You have gangsters who have bankrupted America in the banking domain. You think because they don't wear a black mask, they're not criminals? You're telling me the people who create the policies are all honest? You're telling me that the bankers on Wall Street who sacked the currency are not criminals? Goldman Sachs to be paid $1 billion if CIT fails. This just came out today. Goldman Sachs stands to receive a payment of $1 billion, while U.S. taxpayers would lose $2.3 billion. If embattled commercial lender CIT files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, people familiar with the matter said. In other words, how did this happen? They wrote the law. They hired the pimps who went into the White House, and the pimps who worked for them said, okay, we'll do whatever you want. You pay our bills through campaign funds or whatever. There was a $3 billion rescue finance package that Goldman extended to CIT on June 6, 08, right? And then they wrote a bill that says if they go bankrupt, we get $1 billion, you get nothing. What is this all about? What happened to our country that a group of slimy bankers from Martha's Vineyard could run this country off the rails? To the point, I don't mind if they were able to run the country I don't mind if they even robbed the country. I expect that from vermin from Martha's Vineyard on the Upper East Side. I expect nothing less from the vermin of Wall Street. Nothing less. They're gangsters. You never saw the movie Wall Street, who they are? We know who they are. But things went along fairly well. They robbed enough and they left enough. But this latest generation of vermin on Wall Street is so criminal that they left nothing for anybody. They sucked every dollar into their filthy silk suits. And now the Arabs, the Chinese, French, the Russians are saying, wait a minute, this currency is shot. We don't want anything to do with it. The gangsters have bankrupted the currency. Now, when you add to that picture the money trader who put Obama in power, the man who created Media Matters, who is probably selling the dollar short as we speak, busting out America, I ask you a simple question, a very simple question. What should we do in Afghanistan? Now, this is germane to this whole economic problem that we have. Make no mistake about it. Wars have enriched nations in the past when they were run by rational men who understood to the victor belong the spoils. And wars have bankrupted nations in the past, either when they lost the war, as in the case of Germany in World War I, that was bankrupted by the war because the League of Nations forced them to pay reparations. And that, of course, led to Adolf Hitler's election. And nations have also won wars and gone bankrupt when they're run by incompetent, corrupt presidents of the type we just had in the White House, George Bush. He had his contractor buddies in there for 8 straight years, milking the system dry. After all, how much can you pay for a war? Is there no limit to how much the war cost us in Iraq? So you say, all right, so Obama was elected. He was going to straighten these things out. One of the reasons he was elected was he was an anti-war president. But wake up. He already sent 25,000 more troops before he even got the ink was dry on the presidency. Now they want another 40,000. I see Lyndon Baines Johnson all over again. 25,000, 35,000, 40,000, 50,000. So I ask you a question. A, what are we doing in Afghanistan? Because I still don't know. I keep hearing rationale such as, well, we're there because we can't give it a safe haven to Al-Qaeda. If Al-Qaeda gets a safe haven, it will ennoble the Islamo-fascists. They'll feel victory. Sure, they'll feel victory. When you have one cowardly president after another, of course they're going to feel empowered. You know, 3 B-2A bombers out of Missouri could end this whole problem in a few hours. All they got to do is have a leader, a commander-in-chief, who says, all right, guys, we've had enough of these throwback 15th century woman-hating people. That's the end of the road. You've got the launch codes. We want 3 bombers launched out of Missouri, and we want the entire region of Krapistan eliminated from the planet. We don't care if there's a living plant left in it. We want Krapistan eliminated. We'd have 500 years of peace on the planet. That's never going to happen. Do you understand that's never going to happen? If that's never going to happen, then what will happen? I'll tell you what will happen. Krapistan will get the bomb. And Krapistan will knock us off the planet. Krapistan will take us down, because that's the world you live in. We don't live in the Ivy League of Barack Hussein Obama and Michelle Obama. We don't live in the Ivy League where people bend down to him and get on their hands and knees because the great man has arrived. Oh, yes, sir. Whatever you say, sir. Now he's in the real world and the man is like a fish out of water. He doesn't know what the heck he's doing. On any level, the man doesn't know what he's doing. He has done nothing right since he's become president. The people are screaming out. The only people supporting him are the hacks who will make money off this guy. And the other people who are screaming for him are the outright American-hating communists. Everybody else does not want this man's policies jammed down their throats. They see what a jokester he is. The man expends the president's prestige by flying on Air Force One with a TV star to peddle the Olympics as a lobbyist for a city in the year 2016? It's unheard of. Never happened before. Oh, I heard that Rio sent their president. Great. Now we have a president who's equal to a third world Brazilian president. Isn't that wonderful? Brazil sent their president. Isn't that wonderful? So now the U.S. president expends his prestige by flying as a lobbyist for Chicago. And we're not supposed to notice what this man has done, how he has sullied the presidency by his behavior, bowing down to the Saudi king and taking a piece of gold around his neck like a rap star who just performed in front of the king, apologizing across the globe month after month. If that's not enough insult to our dignity, what comes next? He flies to Copenhagen to peddle the Olympics as a lobbyist, and he fails. What was that all about? Why did he fail? Why did the U.S. come in last? If this man was so great and so smart, somebody set him up for a fall. That's my opinion. Let me repeat that in case you missed it. Somebody misadvised this egomaniac about his relative standing in the world, and somebody sent him on a fool's mission. Somebody within his inner circle said, oh, yeah, go over to Copenhagen. You need a victory right now. You'll come back. You'll win the appointment of a Chicago for the Olympics, and then you'll get your health care bill through, and then go global warming. Then you'll grant amnesty to 25 million illegal aliens. Go ahead. Go to Copenhagen. Who advised him to do that? Who was the genius who said, go over there, you'll win, and they wound up last? Was it the great Axelrod? Tell me, who was it? The great genius from Brooklyn? Mr. Axelrod, who sent him over there? Who advised him? And why would they tell him he was going to win when he came in last? So Obama now has the lowest prestige in American history of any president in modern history. And now he's trying to push socialized medicine, Cuban-style health care. Well, why don't you send that fat slob Michael Moore to Havana for liposuction and let him come back and tell us how good Cuban medical care is? Okay, write that one down. Savage says fatso Michael Moore, fatso, should go to Havana for liposuction and then come back and tell us how good the treatment was. Write it down. Put it down. Quote it. Quote it. See if I care. Savage says fatso Michael Moore should go to Cuba, to Havana University, for liposuction. And after the liposuction, he should come back to America and let us know how wonderful the Cuban medical care system is, because that's what they're trying to fraudulently push down your throat, in my opinion. Now, do I want health care reform? Sure I want health care reform. What kind of health care reform do I want? Oh, I can give you five different things we need. Let's start with tort reform. Get the lawyers out of the health care system. No more lawsuits over 250 grand. You get those vermin out of the system, and you got the best health care reform you could ever ask for. Get the vermin out of the health care system. Get the vermin out, and then hire 1,000 lawyers to go after the criminals who are robbing the health care system blind.
Savage.
We got a war that is going nowhere. We got a currency that's collapsing. We have a healthcare system that is still operational, that is on life support, that is frankly going to be destroyed into a Cuban-style system if Obama gets his way, because La Raza, for example, wants every illegal alien and their offspring treated for free in America. It's unlimited. The insanity is out of control. So you say, well, what do you want to talk about it for? What do you want me to talk about? Baseball, football, basketball? I'm not going to do that. We have a president who's on training wheels, and right now Rome is burning while he is fiddling, as far as I'm concerned. Fiddling by going to Copenhagen, to wherever the heck he went, to sell Chicago for the Olympics home. You hear this? As a lobbyist. Have you ever heard of a president being a super lobbyist? You're going to say they all are? Terrific. So how's he any different? All of you say, oh, well, they all were the same way. Really? I thought he was so different. How different is he then if he's just like the rest of them? So that's why I say, you know, you people better be very careful what you're asking for here. Because if you wind up with Cuba's healthcare system, you're going to end up with something you can't believe. Take a look at the article from Miriam Marquez from the Miami Herald on what the healthcare system actually is like in Cuba, instead of listening to Fatso, who wrote Sicko. I mean, Fatso, the filmmaker, makes a movie called Sicko that's outright left-wing propaganda, and Fatso Sicko is a lie. Fatso should go to Havana to get some liposuction and then get back to us as to how he feels. Yeah, Miami, Florida. Gloria, you're first up this hour. Go ahead, please.
Yes, Dr. Savage, I'm so glad I can talk to you. I came from Cuba back in 1962 when I was 19, and I can tell you that's the most devastating regime to be under. And if you want to ruin the health care, go ahead. We will lose our freedom. We will lose our ability to make choices. And it's horrible. I am very emotional about this situation. I'm very hurt.
Don't even have clean sheets in the Cuban hospitals unless their relatives send them from Miami. Is that correct?
That is correct. And the worst thing is that you lose your ability to have freedom of thought, freedom of opinion, freedom of everything.
Well, that's what Obama and his friends want, is no freedom of speech and no freedom of thought. You know I'm right now banned from speaking in England. You know that, don't you?
No, I listen to you every
Can you believe that I, an American broadcaster, am not free to go to England and speak? Did I have to go there by video conference? They won't let me in that country? And they let murderers and terrorists into their country? That's what the West is becoming under these left-wingers.
Well, I hope for the best for this country, and I agree with you, illegals. I mean, you should be legal when you come to this country, and I agree. 100%.
How are we supposed to afford to pay for the health care, Gloria? It's impossible. God bless you, Gloria. You've been through it. You know what it's all about. So here we are. What do you got to say? Hey, hey, ho, ho. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Why are we in Afghanistan? What should we do with Afghanistan? Should we cut and run and let the Taliban or Al-Qaeda, whatever they call them over there, we know who they are, radical Islamists, you know, why mince words, take over the country? I mean, Karzai is corrupt. He stole the election. I mean, basically, you got a terrorist running Afghanistan right now, propped up by the American government. I mean, you think I don't see it? What, am I blind? I see everything. I have the eye that sees all. I have the all-seeing eye, 360-degree eye. Karzai is corrupt. He's running Afghanistan. Who put him in? We put him in. Why? What are we there for? What the heck does Afghanistan have to do with America? Can anyone explain it to me? For the life of me, I don't know why we are there, why our men are dying. You saw what happened over the weekend. 10 men died. Why did 10 American Special Forces men die? Well, two were shot in the back by Afghani police who were probably Taliban. In the, you know, you would trust them if you were a soldier. You'd want your cohort from the Afghani police fighting alongside you. At night, he puts on a police uniform. You go to sleep, he shoots you in the back. The other eight were overrun on a fort that they set up on top of a hill in some horrendous tribal region. Now, why were they able to overrun the hill? Why was the enemy able to overrun the hill? Well, you didn't read this in your local paper, boys and girls. Half of the hundreds of Taliban who came screaming up the hill to kill our men came out of a mosque. That's right. The imam told them to go kill the crusaders on the hill. And why was the mosque permitted to be a haven, a safe haven for murderers and terrorists? Because of the rules of engagement. Mosques, you see, are off limits. Mosques are sacred. And although they have their weapons hidden in the mosque and they have their murderers hidden in the mosque, you can't blow it off the face of the earth because that would be too sensible if you're fighting a war. Now, although they charged up the hill, which is the reverse of any rule of sanity, they were able to win. Why were they able to win in running up a hill? You know, history of battles. If the enemy has the high ground, retreat, never charge because you're going to lose. And yet the enemy had the low ground and they charged and won. That's despite the fact that we brought in air power after the fact, not before the fact. The reason is our men have rules of engagement that are suicidal. It's no longer do not fire until you see the whites of their eyes. It's something along the lines of, well, I can't even say it on the radio. It's a family show. The enemy, though, has a different set of rules, a different set of rules of engagement. The enemy's rules, as taught to them on the battlefield and in the mosques, is kill every man that you find in the most horrible way. Charge them and kill the crusader. Kill the white devil. Kill them, and kill them. They don't care who's there with them. They don't care if there's an army nurse. They don't care who's there. They're taught one thing. Kill them, kill them, kill them. Our men are taught, oh, don't shoot. Don't blow up that mosque, even though they're charging you from the mosque, because that might look bad tomorrow on Wolfie Blitzer's show on CNN or one of the other propagandist leftist traitors from hell who'll run a picture of a smoking mosque. So you have to make a decision as an American. The American people haven't been given the choice. Has there been a national debate? Why are we in Afghanistan? Should we be in Afghanistan? Has a poll been done on this? Why are we in Afghanistan? Do you give a rat's behind about Afghanistan? I don't. I see no strategic reason for holding on to Afghanistan. Yes, I understand they'll have a victory if you let them take over the country and blah, blah, blah. And then they'll feel empowered, all of that. So what? So they act up, then use the weapons that you have, for God's sakes. Stop ripping us off the military-industrial complex. Trillions of dollars. Submarines, B-2 bombers, Tomahawk missiles unused. We have our men fighting like in the 18th century, hand-to-hand combat and rifles. You hear this? Rifles. We're telling them to use rifles. We have weapons that, that we could fire from invisible sites, from submarines hundreds of miles away. We could wipe them off the map. We don't use them. What good are they? What good are they? So as I say, if we don't have the men to lead us, why are we having men to die for us? If, on the other hand, the American people decide that it's in our national interest to be in Afghanistan, then you have to say, how do we win? You're not going to win their hearts and minds. There are no minds there. There's only hatred. There's only hatred. They hate you. They hate us. They hate our religions, and they hate our way of life. They hate our freedom. They hate our women. They hate everything about us. So you're never going to win their hearts and minds. That's a failed policy that goes back to Lyndon Baines Johnson. It failed in Vietnam. It's going to fail again here. You're not winning the hearts and minds of fanatics like this. So again, use your common sense. Use some knowledge of history. Either we cut and run or we kill them. That's all. It's as simple as that. And we kill them not using the best boys of America. We don't send our boys into a meat grinder to die into the hamburger hill in the sand. We don't send them there and say, don't shoot unless you see this. Don't fire if they're surrounded by women. Don't fire if they're in a mosque. Don't fire if they're in this and that. Are you people crazy? The enemy understands our rules of engagement and he exploits them. Wouldn't you if you were fighting a psychotic enemy? A psychotic enemy that won't even kill your fighters if he has his girlfriend with him? Or his wife or a boyfriend wrapped up in a woman's outfit to make it look like he's with a woman? What would you do if you were the enemy, you idiot, you? So, you know, you ask me to give you my opinion. I'm giving you one man's opinion. Should we be in Afghanistan or not? And if we shouldn't, then let's get out. If we should, three bombers from Missouri could end this conflict in a few hours. All they got to do is have a commander-in-chief who cares enough about America to launch them. And I'll tell you something else. I'll give you a little hint right now. If we had a president who was really fighting for this team called America, and not somehow, we don't know where was he born, what side is he on, we don't know. We have real fears about this government of ours under this current regime. If we had a president who was a real commander-in-chief and he said, you know what, that's it, it's enough, we spent 9 years and some of the best and brightest have died there, I'm fed up with it, launch them. Here's the launch code, launch the bombers out of Missouri. I will tell you that 12 hours later, America would be the strongest nation on earth again. The dollar would rise. The stock market would rise. Confidence in America, both internal and external, would rise. And all of our enemies would stop acting up. All of them would go back to their holes, go back to what they know how to do best, which is hate, hate, and hate again. That's one man's opinion. What's yours? I'll be back.
Savage.
About the collapsing dollar, we're talking about psychos running the government, we're talking about Afghanistan, we're talking about anything that you want to talk about, and we're talking about whether Afghanistan is in our national interest. In other words, why are we in Afghanistan? General McChrystal, as you know, is a new general. He was put in by Obama, and he had the nerve, the commander-in-chief didn't like it. The college constitutional college boy from Chicago. Excuse me, college professor, whatever he was. He wasn't even a professor. I think he was a lecturer. The community organizer, Obama, doesn't like that the real general said the following. He said, you can't hope to contain the fire by letting just half the building burn. That's what General McChrystal said. He doesn't want half measures in Afghanistan. You can't hope to contain the fire by letting just half the building burn. So Obama goes crazy. And they say, oh my God, this is terrible. This is insubordination. This is terrible. McChrystal wants 40,000 more troops, he said. And he said, it won't work otherwise. He said, waiting does not prolong a favorable outcome. This effort will not remain winnable indefinitely, and nor will public support, says McChrystal. And now, of course, Joe Biden and Obama want to lead us into chaosistan, says the general. You hear this? In London, General McChrystal, who heads the 68,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan, as well as the 100,000 NATO forces. You hear this? We already have 168,000 men over there. You hear the number? Did you know that? Tell me you really knew that. Tell me you really knew we had 168,000 men fighting for Western interests, if you want to put it that way, in Afghanistan. Now, of course, Biden and the leftists want to rely on drone missile strikes and special forces ops against al-Qaeda. General said that would lead to chaosistan. Won't work. But don't tell that to the college crowd. College crowd thinks that all they got to do is think it and it's real. So why are we in Afghanistan? Should we be in Afghanistan? If not, should we get out? And if we should be, shouldn't we win? And if we should win, well, let's be real. It's war. I want to remind you of something. A little bit of history. It's simple. It's fast. It's World War II. The Germans didn't give up just because they were losing and it was seen to be that it was over. Once the Allies landed at Normandy, we keep hearing D-Day, D-Day, Schmiday, D-Day, your day, my day, his day. We all know what D-Day was. Once the Allies came ashore, it was over. Everybody knew that. Every military strategist knew that Hitler was defeated. That was after he had been beaten out of Russia, Stalingrad. It was over for him. But did Germany give up because everybody knew it, including his own generals? No, they didn't give up. So what did the Allies have to do? They had to slog their way through, suffering horrendous casualties and killing a lot of civilians, all the way into Berlin. They had to bomb Cologne. They had to bomb other German cities, firebombing them, killing hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children, blowing up hospitals, schools, trains, buses. You think that our men like to drop bombs on hospitals, schools, trains, and buses, houses, and burn people alive? No, but they knew that it was total war. And they also knew there was a fanatical leader called Adolf Hitler. We have a fanatical enemy, whoever he may be. He could be Osama bin Laden. I don't know who he is. But he's just as fanatical as Hitler was in a different way. Same end, though. Destroy the decadent West. Bring down the decadent West. Kill the crusader. Kill the Christian. Whatever you want to say it is. We have the same fanaticism we are facing today. They're not going to change their minds. There's no winning hearts and minds. And so, what choice do you have? You leave Afghanistan. You say, let them take it over. Who cares? And then if they get acting up there, well, you have to take them out then. It might be worse, but all right. You want to do that, then do it. But you can't fight a kind of a gray area war, which is what we've been doing. It won't work. It's not working. That's what the general says. So the general says it, and the White House gets angry at him for saying it. Because this guy was busy with Oprah Winfrey trying to sell the Olympics in Copenhagen. He didn't want to hear about the war. He didn't meet with McChrystal for 70 straight days. He was busy pushing Cuban-style health care down your throat. He was busy pushing the Olympics. He was busy catering to La Russia, the brown supremacist movement. He was busy with them. He wasn't busy with McChrystal. So here we are. Man is hired to run the war. And they're shocked now by the bluntness of a speech he gave in London last week. So he's summoned to an awkward 25-minute meeting on board Air Force One on the tarmac in Copenhagen with the Great One. The president had arrived as a lobbyist for Chicago's unsuccessful Olympic bid. And he calls the general for a face-to-face meeting. The college lecturer versus the general. And he says, how dare you? How dare you say these things? I am the commander-in-chief. I am the commander-in-chief. How dare you? How dare you? And he dresses down General McChrystal, who was already in charge of 68,000 U.S. troops, and 100,000 NATO troops in Afghanistan. 168,000 men answer to him. He is a hardened general. But the community organizer, the Alinsky student, knows more than him. The commander in grief knows more than the general. That's right, you heard it first here. Commander in grief, Barack Hussein Obama. Commander in grief, commander in grief, grief. Why are we in Afghanistan? Where is the health care money supposed to come from? How can we win a war with the rules of engagement like this? Can anyone answer this question? Should Fatso, who created Sicko, go to Havana to get some liposurgery and then get back to us as to how great medical care is in Havana? Let's go to Missouri first. Mike, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Mr. Savage, I want to thank you for what you do, and you're very appreciated out here in the heartland. I just want you to know that.
I know that. I'm not appreciated in my home city, though. I'm appreciated in the heartland where real Americans live, not where the perverts of America live.
I hope that the heartland back here is not getting a hardened heart towards this country, because usually we have a compassionate heart back here, but things are starting to get hard, I'll tell you that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But my take on Afghanistan, at one time I thought that we were there to try to contain Iran and do a strategic surrounding of Iran, and that was a reason for being in Afghanistan. That was early on, right after 9/11. But now I think it's more of a depletion of our troops, of our morale, and bringing in a defeat to the United States so that that chaos, like you say, can take effect, and then communism could try to come back in like it did in the 80s when the Russians tried to bring communism down.
But why should we care about Afghanistan and communism if it's right on our shores? We have Chavez running a communist dictatorship just south of us here in South America. We have communists thrown out in the Honduras, and Hillary Clinton wants the communist dictatorship put back in the Honduras in Central America. You know what I mean?
Oh, exactly, exactly. They're coming at us on all fronts, no matter where we're at. So a defeat for us in Afghanistan is a win for communism, around the world.
I would say that if we launched 3 B-2A bombers out of Missouri and took care of business in Missouri, this dictator in South America would shut his mouth and crawl back into a sugarcane field. I can guarantee you that the communist movement worldwide would take a long pause because they'd be afraid they're next. That's my opinion. We need someone like Reagan launching F-15s into the tent of Gaddafi to stop this before we're all slaves in our own country.
Oh, I agree with that totally. I really do. If we're going to fight...
All right, my friends, I appreciate your listening to me from the heartland. Not from the porn belt, but from the corn belt. I'll be back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We've heard all the arguments on both sides of the aisle. We have listened to every charge and every countercharge, from the crazy claims about death panels to misleading warnings about a government takeover of our health care system. But when you cut through all the noise and all the distractions that are out there, I think what's most telling is that some of the people who are most supportive of reform are the very medical professionals who know the healthcare system best, the doctors and nurses of America.
He's lying about that, too. This was a hand-picked crowd of either low-ranking doctors who were pushed through medical school or those who were in favor of a Soviet-style medical system. That's my opinion. The fact is, it's all staged right now. It's all propaganda all the time. And who do you believe? Well, what you believe is the bottom line. At the end of the day, it's like you have to manage a budget, don't you? The government has to manage a budget. Well, it used to. Well, guess what? He's not managing the budget. Let's start at the top, and then we'll work our way right through to the bottom in about a minute or less. I've heard every critic of my opinion that you can imagine. Every one I've given an opinion, I've heard every criticism of it. For example, if you say Obama's bankrupting America, they'll say Bush bankrupted America. He's only trying to clean up the mess. My answer? He inherited a $1 trillion deficit from George Bush's administration. And how do you fix that with $3 trillion in debt? Is that the answer? $3 trillion and growing? No, that's not the answer. You cut programs, you cut expenses, you don't expand government, you shrink government, et cetera, and so on. So you don't take a $1 trillion debt and make it $3 trillion and say it's going to go away. It's crazy. Now on to the issue of the war. He ran saying Iraq was the wrong war. I remember every speech he gave. I had liberals calling the show for years. Yes, I believe in fighting Islamofascists, but not in Iraq. That was the wrong war. That was Bush doing it because he had a vendetta. It was Bush Jr., blah, 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 blah. When we get in power, we're going to fight in Afghanistan, and we're going to get Osama bin Laden. So now he's in Afghanistan. He puts in a new general. The general comes out and says, you cannot save a burning house by letting half the house burn down. I need 40,000 more troops immediately. Obama goes nuts, summons him to Air Force One on the tarmac in Copenhagen, where the great one is there lobbying for Chicago, and says, General, how dare you say that you need 40,000 more troops? I, the college teacher, I, the community organizer, I, a man who has never fired a Daisy BB gun no more than you, I am the great Obama, and I say I am the commander-in-chief. Aye, aye, sir. So next, I guess, we'll see General McChrystal being thrown overboard, and he'll put in some other guy who will do everything that Obama says he should do, except win the war. Which brings us back to why are we in Afghanistan? Should we be in Afghanistan or should not? If we should not be in Afghanistan, I say get out of there as fast as possible and let the Taliban take it over. If you say that's crazy, they'll have a victory, we must be there, then it's in our national interest to be there, and it's in our national interest to win, then change the rules of engagement, unleash the B-2 bombers out of Missouri, and in 12 hours, the war is over. B-2 bombers, surgical bombs, precision bombing, wipe out entire tribal areas. Every man, woman, and child, unfortunately, will go the same way the Germans went, the same way the Japanese went. That's why you're sitting here with your big fat mouth, all you leftist liars, because better men than you had the guts to save this country. That's correct. The same horror has to be conducted upon the enemy, or we're going to wind up with our cities fried by one of these, let us say, visitors from abroad. One of these wonderful asylum cases, either in our universities or God knows where, waiting to set something off and frying you, perhaps, or God forbid, one of our cities. It's only a matter of time that one of them succeeds. Rules of engagement? Here are their rules of engagement. Kill the infidel. Kill the white man. Kill them all, no matter who's with them. Nurse, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Kill everybody inside that compound. Our rules of engagement? Don't fire until you see the whites of their what? Don't fire at all. Win their hearts and minds. Let's give them booklets on how to make camel burgers. Let's teach them how to become good little peons of the Goldman Sachs a machine. We'll build chains of camel burger stands across Afghanistan, and they'll give up the poppies. They'll give up the poppies for poppy. And they'll all be happy to put on little paper hats and sell camel burgers around Afghanistan. They'll give up their hatred of the West. They will let their women vote and drive cars and hold jobs. Because we'll win their hearts and minds. We'll give them little seed grants to open up camel burger stands. It's not going to happen. You're not going to win their hearts and minds. You have a diehard enemy as fanatic as Hitler. For perhaps similar reasons, with different reasons, similar reasons in some way, just as fanatic. They want to kill us. They want to convert us. And you have to decide what you want to do. You want to fight them on their homeland? Where do you want to fight them? Why are we in Afghanistan? Nobody knows. We keep hearing, well, we're there because we're trying to contain them. If they have this victory, it'll be a great victory for Islamofascism. They'll be doing the war cry, and then it'll be on to the next nation. So that's the domino theory again, isn't it? I heard all of this before. Since I've been born, I've heard this. Since I've been a child, I heard about the domino theory. Remember the domino theory in Vietnam? Why are we in Vietnam? Nobody even knows why we went to Vietnam. Many of you have friends who died there, or you yourself were injured there. Why were we in Vietnam? I had no idea. Nobody knew why we were there. Well, it was called the domino theory that the crackpot McNamara came up with, and the Johnson liberals, all Democrats, by the way. It was Kennedy who got us into Vietnam. Don't ever forget that. Democrats love war. It's good for the economy. So the Democrats got us into Vietnam on the domino theory, which is that if we let Vietnam fall to the North Vietnamese communists, all of Southeast Asia would become communist. Duh. China's communist. What? Well, I mean, China's a communist nation. They're doing real well on a capitalist scheme as well. They're kind of a hybrid communist slash capitalist country, which is what we are. We're a kind of a hybrid nation. Only somehow they're succeeding financially and we're not. Go figure that one out. They copied capitalism from us, and their dollar is worth something. I mean, their yuan is worth something, and our dollar is not worth toilet paper today. Not worth toilet paper. It's frightening. I got money in the bank. What, am I going to wake up and find out that it's wallpaper? Because Obama spent like a crazed sailor? A drunken sailor? Is this guy nuts? Is he disconnected from reality? Are the people around him that insane that they don't understand what the average American understands, is that the country is hovering? We all know the country's bankrupt, that there are nothing to support the dollar. We know that. So the answer is to now print more money and come up with an expanded government program in healthcare, global warming, La Raza, healthcare for illegals, whatever. Whatever Obama wants, Obama gets. Whatever Obama has dreamed of as a left-wing community organizer, Obama shall have, because he's a genius. It's true they sent him to Copenhagen to take a loss, and I'd like to find out who did that. I'd like to find out which advisor told him go to Copenhagen and expend the presidency's dignity on peddling yourself as a lobbyist for the city of Chicago while so many things are going wrong around you. I'd like to know who it was who misadvised the president. That's what I'd like to know, because somebody within his camp misadvised him. Remember, he doesn't know what's really going on in the world. What do you think he really knows? Oh, the president. Let's see what the president says. Here, let's go to the president. Here. He's only a man. How much can he know? So he doesn't know everything, so he relies upon advisors. They tell him, oh, yeah, well, you're loved in Copenhagen. Well, do you think I'll get it? Because if I don't get it, it's going to look bad for me. Yeah, yeah, Obama. Yes, yes, Mr. President. We have good information that the IOC is going to vote for America. So you go take your wife and take the television hostess, Oprah Winfrey, and you use Air Force One. Put all of the prestige of the presidency on the line, because we know this is a sure thing. As sure as it's a Brooklyn Minute, we know it's a sure thing. Who said it? Axelrod? Rahm Emanuel? Which of his advisors misadvised him? Because they sure put this guy in a bad spot. I mean, let's clear the air here. They don't really, you think they really are in charge? Do you think that they really know what they're talking about if they would send the president on a mission of failure like this? So if they don't know that, if they didn't even know that the guy would come in last in Copenhagen and embarrass himself and embarrass America, then what do they know about winning in Afghanistan? What the heck do they know about health care? What the hell do they know about anything? The answer is nothing. Nada. Gornished. I'll be back.
Savage.
What has changed in the last 6 weeks to so drastically make President Obama question the mission in Afghanistan? And I think we have seen a dip in American support for this war. We see Democratic congressional members backing down on supporting more troops for the effort. So I think there is a political element here.
Well, to summarize where we are so far in the Savage Nation, Savage says send Fatso, who did sicko, to Havana to get liposuction, and then have him get back to me about Cuban medical care. And Savage says launch 3 B-2A bombers from Missouri and end the stalemate in Afghanistan. In 12 hours, the world would again respect America. The dollar and stocks would rise. The people would cheer. Any comments on any of these commentaries? This is the Savage Nation. Let's go to San Diego. Larry, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Michael, it's all about the drugs. Look where the poppies are. Look where the troops are. It's all coming back, and our community organizers got a new army coming within the country, all fully funded, ready to go as large as the U.S. Army, and I guarantee
you. Well, I don't know about that. So, you know, your conspiracy theory is way, I mean, come on. You're saying he's funding this community army with drug money? That's what you're saying?
What else are they going to do for us?
I don't know. You know what, Larry? I can't even go there, but I appreciate your paranoia. I don't know. What do I know? You think it's impossible? Michael Savage, the debate free speech at Cambridge Union. It's up on michaelsavage.com with that weird, weird thing of the mouth. It's horrible, the picture I have up there. I had to put it up to attract your attention. I had to. I'm sorry. It's a fixed brace that locks your mouth open and you can't talk. That's what they have in England right now. If they say anything that violates the protocols of the Gordon Brown administration, they're visited by the thought police. We're not too far behind here in this country. They're not too far behind. The libs would like to shut us all up in talk radio and everywhere else in America. They don't like the tea parties. They don't like the town hall meetings. They don't like talk radio. All they want are the little boys and girls to sit and praise Obama and whatever Obama wants. And we're fighting really for the survival of America right now. We don't know where. I talk to people. You know, I just came back from L.A., so I meet a few people here and there. I went to dinner, had a nice dinner. People are actually speculating how far Obama would go if he had total power. Nobody knows. Nobody knows how far this guy would go if he had total power. Nobody actually knows how far his administration will go even without total power. They're frightened of this man. They've never seen such meanness in America as they see now. They've never seen hatred like this in America that they see now. They've never seen such divisiveness that they see now. They've never seen such an inexperienced president in their life. An untested man, a president on training wheels. And yet we have real problems. Afghanistan, the dollar, you go on. And where was he? He went to Copenhagen. I'm asking a critical question. Who advised them to go? Nobody enters an arena that they don't think they're going to win in, unless they're forced into it, you know, in the gladiatorial contest in ancient Rome. They threw you in and you died. That's all. You know, you're going to lose, you lost. But does a man enter a fight where he doesn't have a chance to win? Who told him to go there? And is he that out of touch with reality that he didn't know that America would not get even close to winning the Olympics? Why was he sent there? And the great Oprah Winfrey, you know who watches her, don't you? Why her ratings are so high? Look at the time of the day she's on, and you'll figure it out pretty fair. Who watches television during the day? You do? You watch television during the day? I don't. I don't know anybody who watches television during the day. It's people who don't work, watch television during the day. Bingo, Democrat Party USA. So these are questions that people are asking. I don't know why we're in Afghanistan. I have no idea. I heard the poppy story. I've heard it over and over again. But that's okay. That ties into the Vietnam. We were in there for the opium. It came in, the dope and the opium on the caskets. We all saw that. We all heard about that. And was that the only reason we were in Vietnam? Was all about the drugs? I don't think so. I think that was happening. I'm pretty sure it did happen by what I've read, but I don't think that's the reason we went into Vietnam. I think there were corrupt people in the administration and in the military who took advantage of a waning situation and started bringing in dope and caskets. You know, I don't think that's where we went there. And I think the same thing is going on here. I think it's a secondary problem. I don't believe it's the primary problem. I think the primary reason we're in Afghanistan is because of the domino theory, the same stupidity, the same idiotic foreign policy that led Lyndon Baines Johnson to kill 500,000 Americans is leading us into the quagmire of Afghanistan. Domino theory was a foreign policy during the 50s to the 80s, promoted by the Democrats and by the Republicans, which said that if one land in a region came under the influence of communism, then the surrounding nations would follow in a domino effect. We hear the same thing now with regard to the Taliban or Al-Qaeda. Same exact thing, that if we don't stop them in Afghanistan, the dominoes will all fall, and they will take over all of the Middle East. Same domino theory, one administration after another. Are they correct? Is this a domino theory? Communism in Indochina, U.S. President Dwight Eisenhower put the theory into words in 1954. Eisenhower said, he said the following, "Finally, you have broader considerations that might follow what you would call the falling domino principle." We're going back a long time now. "You have a row of dominoes set up. You knock over the first one, and what will happen to the last one is the certainty that it will go over very quickly. So you could have a beginning of a disintegration that would have the most profound influences." Dwight D. Eisenhower, 1954. Barack Hussein Obama, 2009. Same domino theory. I'm the first one in the current media landscape or the geography of the current media to say that we are following the same failed theory of a domino theory. Of course, it's already recorded and on the blackboard at Fox News for Hem. They're waking Hem up with something new for tomorrow's show.
Savage. We'll be right back.
always welcome back to the Savage Nation. We've got very serious problems right now, and we know that. And the question is, are we going to see a resolution in favor of America or in favor of either our enemies or our competitors? That's the real issue. America's pride is almost at an all-time low right now. America's dignity has been dragged through the mud because of Obama's America Last policies. Americans are a proud people, and they want a proud leader who loves the country. Many of us are shocked that we have a president who goes abroad for month after month and tells everyone he apologizes for what the country did. What is he apologizing for? For winning World War II? What's he apologizing for being the biggest recipient of immigrants in the world? What's he apologizing for? Nobody understands the answer. Then we see the guy go over to Europe, Copenhagen, big public relations event, lobbying for Chicago, and America comes in last. No one understands how he can miscalculate a move like this. And you start to ask yourself, if this administration and his advisors can miscalculate even an Olympics bid, what else are they miscalculating? Well, they're miscalculating the war in Afghanistan. They're miscalculating destroying the best healthcare system the world has ever seen. They're miscalculating flooding America with even more illegal aliens instead of slamming a door shut, opening it up further. They're miscalculating maybe everything. The problem is that we have a supine press. You know, there was a phrase called the fourth estate. Fourth estate is the media. The media is supposed to be the watchdog of America. Instead, they become lapdogs. Take a look at NBC today. Because of inside deals with the parent company, NBC. NBC is a throwaway network now at all levels, from top to bottom. The others are no better. You know that. They're all in favor of whatever he says they do. They're all extreme radical leftists. ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN. Extreme radical leftists. So whatever the administration wants, they give them. So therefore, the fourth estate has become relatively useless to the American people. You have no ability to actually know what's going on. You need the media. You need reporters. You need journalists, and many of them are still doing their job. The Washington Times does its job. Many websites do their job. And talk radio does its job. The Internet does its job. And yet you have an administration that says we want no criticism that's negative. Any criticism that is negative, because there's positive criticism, meaning they have fakers out in the media who pretend to be criticizing them but really supporting them. In other words, they want pure and absolute, total and absolute power and total and absolute propaganda all the time. So in addition to having a fourth estate that is now in the hands of the Democrat administration, we have a fifth column openly working in the United States of America. So you have a fourth estate working for Obama and a fifth column working against the American people. Where does it end? Nobody knows. Round and round it goes. Where it ends, nobody knows. I have a lot to say that I haven't even touched on. This is sort of the iceberg of what I want to say. You know, I was gone down in L.A. for a while, and I spent a lot of days reading a book called Unholy Alliance by Peter Levenda. He was on the show a few weeks ago. It's a history of Nazi involvement with the occult. A history of Nazi involvement with the occult. It's a phenomenally interesting book. And I learned an awful lot from this book. I learned an awful lot about governments and propaganda. It's a very stimulating book. He is a liberal. I know that. I can see his orientation as liberal. But it's a good piece of scholarship up to a point. But I learned what a totalitarian government becomes when it has no opposition whatsoever. That would be Hitler's Germany. We all know what happened to the opponents of Hitler in the beginning, and then what happened once he had total power. We know what the purges led to, and we know about the concentration camps. We all know the arc of totalitarianism. What you don't understand, though, is that Hitler's total power didn't begin overnight. It didn't happen like, oh, he was elected and suddenly there was a total power. It didn't happen that way. It happened by degree. It happened slowly. His thugs in the street, his brown shirts beat up the opponents, very much like Obama's thugs with truncheons in the Black Panther Party who stood outside voting booths with clubs in Philadelphia and beat people up and scared them away from polling booths. And you say, well, oh, come on, that's not the equivalent of the brown shirts. That can't happen here. Well, the case came up, and Eric Holder, our great attorney general, the man who freed the Puerto Rican terrorists when he was assistant attorney general, said we're not going to pursue the Black Panthers. Nobody knows why. Why not? I mean, what's more fundamental to America than the vote, and what's more abhorrent to the American than voter intimidation? Why nothing? Then why wouldn't the attorney general, top law enforcement cop in America, pursue the Black Panthers? And we know about ACORN. We know about ACORN, the illegal voters. We know about illegal aliens. We know about the millions of illegal aliens in this country who voted and voted for Obama. And yet no one says anything about it. And it's all a road to serfdom, as said by a very brilliant woman. The road to serfdom does not occur overnight. There are many stations of the cross along the way where the skin is flayed and eventually you wind up crucified at the end of the road. And so the question is, what do we the people do while we still have tremendous freedom? Now, look at the freedom I have. Look at the freedom I have in this country. I don't have this freedom in England. You say, how could that be? How is it possible that a nation like England, that gave the world the Magna Carta, which was the founding document upon which the U.S. Constitution was written, of course the Bible had something to do with it, but the Magna Carta, which liberated the serfs to have relative freedoms, certainly of speech, now this land has fallen in the hands of socialist labor partyites under Gordon Brown, who impose so-called political correctness upon the people. And astonishingly, they say that the American talk show host Michael Savage cannot come to England. We're putting him on a list with murderers and terrorists. And virtually nobody in the major media will come to my defense. It doesn't matter. I have my own defense fund. Fortunately, I have millions of listeners who support me. And my book, which is coming out, which is going to be a shockwave heard around the world. I am telling you that Banned in Britain may not sell as many copies, let's say, as Fatso's movie has sold tickets. But I can guarantee you that every person who reads this book is going to come away shaken by what they discover. They're going to come away shaken to realize that this injustice has been done and the U.S. government has done nothing to aid an American member of the media. Moreover, his own cohorts in the conservative media have done nothing as well, because they're all part and party of the same government media complex. I'm not here to complain to you. I'm here to alarm you. I'm here to ring a bell. I'm here to set off shockwaves through America, because I am telling you that if it happened in England, it can happen here. It's happened in Canada. You wouldn't expect it to happen in Britain and Canada, would you? The end of free speech. You expect these things to happen in North Korea. You expect to hear them happening in China, etc. But you wouldn't expect freedom of speech to be sacrificed in a Western nation, would you? And what does this have to do with Obama? Well, I'll let you figure it out. I'll let you figure out if it has anything to do with Obama. What has this champion of constitutional law done for Michael Savage? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. And so I say, when I debate next Thursday, and I've been preparing for it, Thursday, October 15th. Unfortunately, you won't be able to watch it because it's going to be on an IP device. I'm here in San Francisco, there in England. My seat will be empty, and there'll only be a video monitor, believe it or not. We're going to get the sound for it for you for the show the next day, I guess. I'm saying one thing. It's one line. This debate should awaken all free British citizens to the disastrous state the Brown government has created, says Savage. By speaking passionately about freedom of speech, I hope to appeal to the British people and the incoming conservative leadership to remove my name from this list of murderers and terrorists. It should affect you personally. Today it's me, tomorrow it's you. That's all. Now, what does it have to do with Obama? Well, everything and nothing. Everything, because this administration is doing nothing for an American citizen banned from a Western nation. After all, I never killed anybody. I don't condone violence. I have never promoted violence. And yet they put me on a list with murderers and terrorists. What has my government done for me lately? Nothing. Ask not what your government can do for you, but what you can do for your government. So saith John F. Kennedy. Ask not what your government can do for you, but what you can do for your government. Now, the new mantra under Obama would be, ask not what you can do to defend America, but what your government can do to take away your freedoms. So we go back again to the primary. Men are dying in Afghanistan. 10 died over the weekend. 2 shot in the back while they slept. Can you imagine men as strong as this, as brave as this, as handsome as this, as noble as this? Special forces men. These are not just, you know, ordinary guys. These are really great guys. After a mission, they go to sleep in their secure bunks, and they are fragged, shot in the back while they slept by Afghanis dressed in police uniforms who they had fought side by side with. It's Vietnam all over again. Fragging and a debacle leading to Confuzistan. And who's running the war now? It's not George Bush. Oh, you can keep blaming George Bush all you want, but it's no longer George Bush's war. Obama had the power to end it one way or the other. He could have ended it by taking a more muscular tone towards the enemy, taking the war to the enemy, using B-2 bombers, whatever he had to use, and get it over with and get the men out of there. Or he could have taken the men out of there altogether, which he can still do, but he's done nothing. He's sort of in a gray zone. So Afghanistan is really the issue. Let me again reiterate, wars have bankrupted countries before. George Bush, what did it cost this country? $1 trillion, that war? Does anybody really know what the Iraq war cost us? Remember, Bush lied and people died. Bush lied when he said this war will pay for itself. Now, I remember all these things because when it comes to politics, I have an almost photographic memory. Ordinary stuff, my memory is ordinary. Extraordinary stuff, it's perfect. Bush lied. In the beginning, he said this war in Iraq would pay for itself through oil. Have you seen one barrel of oil come to America in order to pay for the, what, $1 trillion it cost? No, I haven't seen one barrel. I haven't seen one barrel of free oil come from Mexico to pay for the social cost of the illegal aliens from Mexico, have you? Why is that? Because the Seven Sister oil companies do not want more oil on the market. They want to retain their cartel and their prices. So there's your answer. So you could say that Bush fought the war for oil. You could say a lot of things that are probably true. But now we're not in Iraq in that way anymore, are we? We're not really fighting in Iraq. We've turned it over to a bunch of cutthroat Shiites now. The cutthroat Sunnis are subdued. So now we have it in the hands of cutthroat Shiites, good friends of Iran. So we created a greater Persia. My worst nightmare came true. George Bush made the worst mistake imaginable. He took out a Sunni leadership that was suppressing the Shia, who were allied with the Iranian Shia, and instead he created a new Persia. A new Persia. That's what he did. So in other words, our men died in order to have Ahmadinejad wind up with a bigger sphere of influence. So that's over with. They won. We lost. And the reason we lost is because of the corruption within the administration and the government itself, in my opinion. One man's opinion. I have no power. No one listens to me. I'm of no importance in the world of ideas. My 25 books have no meaning. No. What's important are the people on pills on NBC. The people on pills with pancake makeup and pink ties and pink soles. They're the important ones. Not the talk show host who has a tuxedo on his soul. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What President Bush and Senator McCain don't understand is that the Central Front in the war on terror is not in Iraq, and it never was. The Central Front is in Afghanistan and Pakistan, where the terrorists who hit us on 9/11 are still plotting attacks 7 years later. Today, the Taliban is on the offensive. Al-Qaeda has a new sanctuary, and its leaders are putting out videotapes. Yet under President Bush's plan, we still have nearly 4 times the number of troops in Iraq than Afghanistan, and we have no comprehensive plan to deal with the Al-Qaeda sanctuary in northwest Pakistan.
That was Obama then. Who is Obama now? Now we have an Obama nervously telling a general who asked for more troops to shut up and let the commander in grief handle the war. That was on the tarmac in Copenhagen as he was busy acting as a lobbyist for the city of Chicago. He had the time to call in General McChrystal and dress him down for telling the world that things are looking bad and we need more troops. But listen to what Obama just said. We have the sound bites. Now you understand the danger of truth. Now you understand the danger of talk radio. You know, it's a small operation, but we do have a memory here, and we have archives. There was Obama saying that when he became president, Afghanistan would be his focus, and he would deny his sanctuary to the Taliban. Well, the general says, okay, you can't save a burning house by letting half of it burn down. We need more troops. And Obama says, no. That clip was from September 9th, 2008. So why are we in Afghanistan? According to the president, we're there in order to deny the Taliban a sanctuary. Yet the general, who's a command of 168,000 American and NATO troops, says we need more troops. We need 40,000 more. It's Vietnam all over again, and I'm not so sure we should stay there, personally. I'm not so sure that a sanctuary for these haters of freedom is a bad idea. I say give them their own country. I say let them come in from around the world, right into Afghanistan. Let them have a wonderful time. Let them draw them in from Brooklyn, from Dearborn, from Los Angeles, from wherever they are, Indonesia. Let them all flow into their new holy land, their new Jerusalem. Let them all flock to Afghanistan. And then you'll have them all under one roof if you follow the drift. Texas, Zach, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, my point is that we don't need to pull out of the war in Iraq, or Afghanistan, I'm sorry. Been fighting there for 9 years, yes, that's true. But American people are too impatient, and they're not seeing the results that they want to see. We haven't killed Bin Laden, and they're getting tired of it, and they want to pull
out. 9 years is a little longer than World War II, isn't it? Yet we're not winning. Why are we not winning? Rules of engagement, timid leadership, cross purposes, no clear direction, decisions coming from the wrong people, not giving the troops what they need, unclear command structure. So if we're not going to change the rules of engagement, then we have to get out of there. I've come to that conclusion. What's your conclusion? Brian in North Carolina, fire away on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I learned a long time ago that investigators, lawyers, and very intelligent people like yourself never ask a question they don't know the answer to. And so I think that you do, and in my opinion, I think that we're there for the greater good. Are we not? I mean, isn't
that... what is the greater good, though, Brian? What is the greater good?
I think it's to stop a soccer field from turning into a killing field. I mean, we saw the video of them, you know, the Taliban going in and shooting women in the back of the head for whatever reason. I think that, you know, as we move forward, we have to continue.
No, look, there's nobility in stopping them from oppressing a population. But at what cost, Brian, and when does it end? 50 years from now? When? How long can we afford this? We're bankrupt. The country is financially busted. Where's the money going to come from, Brian? In other words, we're not using our weapons that we have. Let's be clear. Let's cut to the chase. We don't have to go bankrupt to win this war. We have the bombers sitting there on the tarmac in Missouri in a hangar somewhere. Why don't we use them?
We'd become emasculated. I mean, we're worried about, you know... what
if we unleashed 3 B-2A bombers out of Missouri, in 12 hours, it would be over. In 12 hours, the Chinese, the Russians, the Saudis would start understanding America is back. This is a country not to be kicked around anymore. The people would cheer, and the terrorists would run into hiding places in 12 hours. But we don't have the leadership able to do this. We have the weapons, but we don't have the will. So if nothing is changing this quotient. We've had the weapons going back to Vietnam, but we didn't have the will to win that war. And on top of it all, we had a fifth column in the form of Walter Cronkite and his left-wing cohorts in the media who shot our troops in the back with lies and deceit every day on the media. Has anything changed in this country? We're in free fall. And only a strong leader who understands what's at stake can save this country from this free fall. We have 12 hours. 12 hours can turn this whole thing around.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now,
America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Well, the lead story today is Afghanistan, which was the centerpiece of Obama's campaign, which was we're in the wrong war, we shouldn't be in Iraq, we should have been in Afghanistan, we should get Osama bin Laden. He fires the general, he puts in a new general, the new general says we need more troops, and he doesn't want to hear what the general has to say. The headline is Obama Biden creating Chaosistan, says the general. Chaosistan is the operational word. It's interesting to me that OB, that's Obama Biden, is trying to find OB, which is Osama bin Laden. Isn't that interesting? Am I the first in the media to say it's OB versus OB? Anyway, it's a mess. We have an anti-war left-wing college teacher running the military. He's now the commander-in-chief, a man who has obviously never fired a Daisy Beebe gun. He's now telling the generals they don't know what they're doing. Sounds awfully similar to me to someone else in history who had no military experience and wound up running the military into the ground. Beware the coming tide. You have to go to michaelsavage.com and see this picture of a mouth brace that locks your mouth open so you can't talk. It's shocking. It's frightening. It's medieval. My question is, do you want to end up like this for criticizing Pelosi or Obama? Watch out, because you may be blacklisted next. Okay? You may be blacklisted next. Incidentally, I'm proud to tell you that I have a new press release for you. Michael Savage to debate free speech at the Cambridge Union on October 15th. That's right. Michael Savage, the author of 25 books with a radio audience of 10 million listeners, who has been banned from Britain by Gordon Brown, will argue against the insanity of political correctness. On Thursday, October 15th, Savage will appear via internet link to argue his case for freedom of speech. Quoting Winston Churchill, Savage will attempt to save England from a descent into mental slavery where petty bureaucrats dictate what can and cannot be discussed. This debate should awaken all free British citizens to the disastrous state the Brown government has created. By speaking passionately about freedom of speech, I hope to appeal to the British people and the incoming conservative leadership to remove my name from this list of murderers and terrorists. If you want to read the whole story, the inside story, and see the secret emails, you have to go to michaelsavage.com and order Banned in Britain, Beating the Liberal Blacklist. You can still do that today. From CNS News, we have this headline. Hispanic caucus wants criminal illegal aliens free to roam the United States. You're not going to believe this. The Congressional Hispanic Caucus has asked the Obama administration to immediately terminate a program that has identified more than 120,000 illegal aliens, many of whom are in prison. Which side are they on? Huh, I'll let you figure it out. They're in the White House. I'm not. Another article, San Francisco is the world's most provincial city. As the world burns, wars going on, the economy crumbling, thousands of morons dressed in neon wigs and butterfly wings and danced half-naked down Market Street. Oh, how wild. Oh, what a wild, 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 far-out crowd. Schmucks from Peoria who moved to San Francisco to let it all hang out, man. Go back where you came from, you rubes. Top UK soldier calls the Taliban victory in Afghanistan a terrifying prospect. The chief of the general staff described the conflict as this generation's war and added that failure by NATO would have an intoxicating effect on militant Islam. Wow, he said Islam. Yay, what a brave world leader. From Topeka, investigation reveals workers at women's prison run a sex trade. Huh. Inmates and officers say as many as one-third of the 250 employees have at one time been involved in contraband activities with prisons, including those using sex as currency. Wow, what a good job that is. Sex felon has 100th birthday behind bars. You got to see this story. A geriatric jailbird who celebrated his 100th birthday, the oldest inmate in New York. Take a look at him. He's in good shape. I wonder what his secret is. I don't even want to hear it. From San Francisco, the school board chief uses the district credit card as her own. Try to listen to what she has to say. You won't believe the language this woman uses. I doubt very much she could pass a fifth grade reading test, but under any twosome newsome, she's the San Francisco school's chief. Why? I'll let you figure it out. From the London Times on michaelsavage.com, we're in Vietnam all over again. Afghans are fragging U.S. troops, that is, shooting them in the back while they sleep, and the Dems are mismanaging the war. It's Vietnam redo. Here's a big one you have to see. La Raza president wants health care reform for illegals. Really? Health care reform for illegals? She said health care reform should include everyone, amigo. You pay for it, stupid gringo. Finally, don't miss this one. Cuba's lauded health care system is a hoax. Miami Herald. Cuba's lauded health care system is a hoax. I would say send a liberal to Cuba the next time they need some health care and let them get back to you. If that's not news that's bad enough to ruin your day, here's a little bit more. Goldman Sachs, you know who they are, don't you? The gang that can shoot straight, the gang that runs America, the gang that put Treasury secretaries in for the last three presidencies, the bankers on Wall Street. They're going to be paid $1 billion if the embattled commercial lender CIT files for bankruptcy. Goldman wins $1 billion. Why? They wrote the law with their little friends who they put into office. Remember, politicians are only front men for the bankers and other special interests. So the politicians, the Lilliputians put in by Goldman, write any law that Goldman wants. Whatever Goldman wants, Goldman gets. So Goldman Sachs will get $1 billion while taxpayers would lose $2.3 billion if the lender CIT files for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. And you thought you lived in a democracy? You live in a hip-hop-cracy. A new Rasmussen poll says that just 30% of Americans say America will be the most powerful nation at the end of the century. Oh, I don't even want to think about it. Here's one, Barbara Boxer, the bagel. Boxer. Boxer with the gold lame brain. Boxer, the woman who's never climbed a mountain. Boxer, the woman who's never sailed the sea, who knows everything about mountains and seas, claims that the climate bill could bring billions in investments. Well, what she didn't tell you is that her family is in part of that investment cycle. They apparently are going to make a lot of money. And by the way, this lunatic is the chairman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee. Can you believe this? Appearing on the Crescent News Network, she said, "We need that private capital. We need that money. We'll create a number of jobs." Oh, yeah. Barbara Boxer, Henry Waxman, John Kerry, they have one agenda: rob you blind. From England, the Conservatives promised that if they're elected, they'll put 100,000 in jail to clear Britain's streets of thugs. They will ditch the Labour Party's policy of releasing prisoners because there are not enough cells. Instead, the Tories, the Conservatives, will build 5,000 additional prison places. You hear this? They're going to have new laws to jail people who attack policemen. They're going to punish thugs who terrorize housing projects. They're going to throw out police chiefs who refuse to tackle families from hell. They're going to cut parole for badly behaved prisoners. I only hope that Governor Schwarzenegger is listening. The big heartbreak is that 10 troops were killed the other day, two of them shot in the back by an Afghani policeman as they slept. Two Special Forces heroes shot in the back while sleeping by an Afghani policeman. You know, Beowulf, you and I both know we're going to lose there. I don't care how many troops we send in. Whichever troops are told to kill, kill, and kill will win. Our troops are told to make sure they don't hit any civilians, don't blow up a mosque, blah, blah, blah. That's why no matter how many troops we're sending, we're going to send them into a meat grinder. If we really are serious about pacifying Afghanistan, I'm sorry to tell you, it was done before. How was Germany pacified in World War II? Was it through negotiation with the Nazis? We firebombed Dresden. We firebombed Berlin. They had the guts to decimate the enemy in his home. And only then were the Russians able to go in, and they still didn't give up, by the way. Only then were the Russians able to get into Berlin, the capital of Germany. And in a hand-to-hand battle, 400,000 Russians died to finally pacify and subdue Germany. Did you hear the number, Beowulf? We are playing with fire, and we have morons who are going to get us all burned. So, as I said at the beginning, Obama is fighting with the general he put in place in Afghanistan because the general knows what's going on. Obama is a left-wing college teacher playing at being commander-in-chief. Just get him a toy uniform. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Senator Barbara Boxer from Brooklyn and John Kerry from Boston have introduced a global warming bill to the Senate, similar to the massive bill that went through the House of someone's representatives. Joining us now is Ben Lieberman, who has been watching this insanity for us.
Well, thanks, Mike. Well, Senators John Kerry of Massachusetts and Barbara Boxer of California just introduced their big global warming bill, the Clean Energy Jobs and American Power Act. Like the companion version that narrowly passed in the House of Representatives last June, this Senate bill is a multi-trillion dollar attempt to deal with the greatly exaggerated threat of global warming and would do America far more harm than good. Make no mistake, this so-called cap-and-trade bill is really just an energy tax. And a huge energy tax at that. It would raise the cost of fossil fuels, the coal, oil, and natural gas America relies on for 85% of its energy. The goal is to ration this energy by pushing up its price high enough so that we're forced to use less of it. Household energy prices are expected to rise by over $400 in 2012, the year the bill's provisions first take effect, and then rise to over $1,200 per household per year by 2035. Gasoline prices go up 17 cents per gallon by 2012 and $1.38 per gallon by 2035, and that's on top of everything else that might raise gas prices in the future. Now, that's right. This is a deliberate attempt by Washington to make gasoline higher so that we have to cut back on driving after all their talk about sharing our pain when gas was $4 a gallon back in 2008. And since energy goes into almost everything from food to manufactured good, it's not just energy costs themselves that go up. It's the cost of nearly everything that would go up under this energy tax scheme. For a typical household of four, both the direct and indirect impacts of the higher energy costs work out to nearly $3,000 per year. Now, the bill's also a major jobs killer, over 1 million job losses, according to a Heritage Foundation analysis. And note that these are net job losses after the much-hyped green jobs are taken into account. Especially hard hit is what's left of America's manufacturing sector. Some of these jobs will be destroyed entirely, while others will be shipped to foreign countries, most of whom have stated that they would never impose such costly restrictions on themselves like this global warming bill. So we can think of it as environmental outsourcing. And all for what? Well, global warming fears have proven to be overstated. In fact, there hasn't been any warming for the last decade. And the cap-and-trade approach in this bill has been tried in Europe, and it's not working. According to one estimate by climate scientist Chip Knappenberger, even assuming significant man-made global warming in the years ahead, this bill would at most reduce the Earth's future temperature by no more than 0.2 degrees Celsius by 2100, an amount too small to verify and certainly too small to even matter. So this bill is all economic pain for little or no economic. So this bill is all economic pain for little or no environmental gain. Now, the good news is this bill will have a tough time in the Senate. The public understands that global warming is not a crisis and is not interested in a costly and an ineffective means of addressing this overstated threat. What they want is recovery from the recession and a long sustained period of economic growth, which is exactly the opposite of what this Kerry Boxer global warming bill would give us. We've already seen a strong backlash to government-run health care proposals, and we see that many Americans believe that the stimulus package was a waste of money. The last thing we want or need is one more big-ticket proposal that would shrink the economy and hurt average Americans, but expand the size and scope of the federal government, and that's what this global warming bill would do. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben. Just as the bill from the House of some representatives, there's no way we can pay for this insanity. Here in the land of the trivial, San Francisco, the local newspaper has a feature front page story entitled Miss Cougar Accepts Prize in Palo Alto. Anything to do with sex is big news in the Bay Area because they have their heads up at the you-know-whats here. And they talk about Miss Cougar America, age 42, and her boyfriend, age 22. It's a new beginning for me, said the suburban management. Cougar, married for 20 years recently, that wasn't ready for something or someone new. I went from soccer mom with short hair, flat heel shoes, and fanny packs to cougar. I believe every woman has a cougar in them, someone who doesn't need a man for anything other than companionship, meaning sex, hot sex. So now they have a national cougar convention. And if you don't know what a cougar is, it is older women who have lost it, who attract younger men who are so messed up emotionally that they can't find a woman their own age and are only attractive to old women. But they, you know, they fancy it up and call it something else. And so they have a thing called Miss Cougar. I suppose it's harmless. If it's consensual, it's fine. But I've been thinking about this cougar thing. I would need a woman over 100 if I were looking for a cougar. You ever think about that? In other words, it's older women and younger men. And it says it doesn't matter nowadays. We're past that barrier. It matters what you bring to the table, he said, a 24-year-old guy who likes old women. And he says, look at Sotomayor, Condoleezza Rice, Hillary Clinton pushing the boundaries in the working world. The Bay Area is the perfect place for this. Yeah, everything, the Bay Area this, the Bay Area that. Build it up, a bunch of schmucks, Bay Area. Out of town, as the whole thing's out of town. That's all. There are no limits to the lengths that women will go to in order to have sex. Now, are they going to have a pride contest about old women and young men? This is ridiculous. It's clownish. You know, why call them cougars? Just say they're old ladies who get young men. What cougar? It's unbelievable to me, the country that we're living in. Don't call me on it, but I was just thinking about how absurd it is. Older women, younger men. So I need a woman over 100 if I wanted to find a cougar. Are women that old still looking for... I'm not looking, I'm saying, but do they still look for guys at 90? I don't even know anymore what's going on. Miss Cougar. Who came up with that idea of a cougar? It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
She wore blue velvet, but in my heart there'll always be precious and warm a memory through the years. And I still can see velvet through my tears.
This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
The mainstream media's portrayal of the average American citizen is not very flattering. You know, anybody who feels the Obama administration may not have our best interests at heart are immediately labeled teabaggers or conspiracy theorists or fringe. Our next guest interviewed thousands of people and polled a million by phone and wrote a book with his findings entitled What Americans Really Want, Really. And he joins us now. Frank Luntz, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for letting me on.
Frank, tell us about your book.
I wouldn't be surprised if some of your listeners had input in the writing of this book. I got a little tired of listening to the media describe the American people in very angry, hostile ways just because the American people were angry with life today and with the situation that they face and the challenges that Washington seems to put upon them. And so I went out and I interviewed 6,400 people. It's one of the largest surveys of its kind. And I wanted to know what they really wanted in terms of their job, of the government, for their children, for their retirement, their spirituality, how they live their day-to-day lives. I wanted to put forward a book that wasn't the media's description of what Americans think, what they believe, and what they want. I wanted this to be the perspective from the American people themselves.
Well, what surprised you the most?
I was genuinely shocked at how widespread this sense of anger is in America. We asked the ultimate question from the movie Network. Are you mad as hell and not going to take it anymore? And to my surprise, 72% said yes. Now, I've been asking that question since 1992. And we've never had, back in 92, it was 32%. We've never had a situation where almost 3 out of 4 Americans describe themselves as being angry. And there are two things that are driving that anger. One of them is a lack of accountability from Washington, and the other, a lack of respect from Wall Street.
What is driving this anger towards Washington?
The anger towards Washington is because, and this is driven towards both political parties, it's not just anger against those who are in power, it's an anger against the power itself. And when I asked Americans what they wanted most out of Washington that they're not getting, they described it in a single word, accountability. They want politicians who look you straight in the eye and say what they mean and mean what they say. It's okay to be passionate. It's okay to be inspirational. It's okay to tell the truth, is what the American people are asking. And now I want to flip that around, and this is why I'm so grateful to do your show, because I know that so many of your listeners are attending these town hall meetings and are very active in speaking up and telling Washington no to bailouts, no to stimulus packages, no to national health care, no to more spending. But they're not necessarily doing it effectively. And if I can be candid, another reason why I wrote What Americans Really Want, really, was to provide the script for people who might have the chance to meet with an elected official or want to raise a challenge at the workplace or simply want to know what to say when they're talking with friends or at a barbecue. And the first thing, and I'm going to make it really simple, because it is that simple, the most powerful word in the English language when you're addressing what you resent the most in Washington is a three-letter word, why. The American people ask these questions, or this is what I want to see the American people ask. Why do you spend money, so much money, and you have no idea how to pay for it? Why are you passing legislation that we all have to follow, and you haven't even read the bill yourself? Why are you trying to take over health care, and you're not even telling us what it's going to mean to us, and it's our lives that are at stake? That simple question, why, is the most powerful question you can ask at a town hall meeting, at a public function, and I hope that people will attempt to be more effective in what they say, not just passionate in what they say.
Your book mentions Generation 2020 looking at things more differently than any other generation. Please explain that one.
You have to remember that our kids don't remember the O.J. Simpson trial, don't remember Johnny Carson, that they grew up in a very different environment, and that they only know of cell phones, they only know of computers, that to them wireless has been something that they've become accustomed to, that they've grown up with. And so their attention span is different. This is, by the way, the first generation that spends more time in front of a computer screen than in front of a television screen. We always wondered how we would get people away from television. Well, now the kids are addicted to the computer. And so they look at life differently. We asked a question. I want it all, and I want it now. Their parents disagreed with that statement. Their grandparents overwhelmingly disagreed with that statement. Half of 18 to 29-year-olds would agree, I want it all, and I want it now. They don't have a sense of delayed gratification. They don't have a sense that they have to work for something for years in some cases before they can get it. And I think it's one of the reasons that attracts them to Barack Obama, because he's offering them stimulus and jobs and health care and all these great benefits, and they're in their early 20s. He's giving them, in essence, Christmas every day of the year. And their parents, and particularly their grandparents, are turning against all this because they know that Christmas presents, someone's got to pay for them.
Well, what did you learn about the work environment now?
Now, I realize that most of the people who listen because they're interested in politics. But in this time that we live in, where so many people are either unemployed or in danger of losing their jobs, I wanted to focus the book on what happens in the workplace. And there is tremendous anxiety and frustration. I want to give your listeners one warning, a sentence that they should never say. This is the sentence that is most likely to put them on the unemployment line. If your boss or your supervisor or your manager comes over to you and says, could you please do this for me? And your response is, and I quote, wait a minute, that's not my job, unquote. That may be the last sentence that you say. If you tell your boss in this economic environment of 2009, it's not my job, well, it may not be your job because someone else may be doing your job. It is the most likely trigger of a firing of anything in the workplace. Now, there's even more in the book about what to say and how to communicate to your supervisors and how they should be communicating to you, because that is the number one complaint within the workplace, that the communication isn't clear, it isn't concise, and it isn't educational. And it works both ways, whether you're trying to understand what it takes to get an advance, to get a promotion, or whether you're a manager and trying to get the most out of your employees. They want more communication. They want more explanation. They want more detail. You can never provide enough information. Enough is never enough. And I think that's the most important finding that you'll see in this book.
Well, how does religion tie in?
Religion is a very dangerous topic, but it is such an important topic, particularly now. What we found in the research for what Americans really want, really, is that the more religious you are, the more likely you are to pray, the more likely you are to attend church or synagogue, the more likely you are to be happy and healthy, the better the relationship you have with your family and friends, the more content you are at work, the more likely you are to volunteer or donate to charity, and the more optimistic you are in the future. There seems to be a campaign against organized religion that I don't understand, because what this book uncovers so clearly and concisely is that the deeper your faith and the greater your spirituality, the happier and the healthier you are. And that's really powerful.
What feeling did all of these interviews with the average American leave you with?
In talking to not just 6,500 Americans, but in the 1 million interviews that I've done in my career, either through telephone or internet or face-to-face, we have always been the most optimistic, the most forward-looking, forward-thinking society. But what this book uncovers is the fear that we have for our children. I'm going to give you two statistics. 57%, a majority, believe that their children will not inherit the America that they got, that it's going to be worse. And only one-third, 33%, believe that their children's quality of life will be better than theirs. Now, think about that. So much of the American dream is about intergenerational improvement. So much of it was about our sacrifice so our kids would have a better life. But thanks to Washington and Wall Street and West Hollywood, we think life for our kids and the next generation is going to be worse. What Americans really want, really, is for our kids to have the same opportunity to the American dream that we had. It's for our kids to have the same freedom that we had. It's for them to reach for the stars like we were able to. There's a lot of positive in this book, but there is that warning. If we don't turn things around now, it's going to be worse for our kids and for the next generation.
Frank Luntz, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
This has really been a privilege. I know you reach a lot of people, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
Big Shu Schumer was out trying to sell Obama's plan for socialized medicine, but he started out on a different topic.
I'd rather beat the Red Sox, but I'd rather play the Angels. You know, for the first time in 5-6 years, they're not a bunch of rich guys playing together. They're a team, and I give number one credit to Teixeira, the new Paul O'Neill. He's acting like a team player.
He is.
And the rest of them, too. Posada's developed. You know, they're a team.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
they were when they had Brocious and O'Neill right. and all these team guys.
Yeah.
Jeter always was.
Oh, my God. These people hold the fate of our nation in their hands, and they're talking about something like baseball. They're twittering while Rome burns. But then he finally got around to talking about health care and the so-called public option. I call it the Cuban option.
The overwhelming majority of Democrats in the Senate are for it. Whether we get 60 or not, well, that'll depend on where it's put in the bill and how that all works. And there are a number of compromises. I'm talking to some of the moderates, and they're very open to it. The House is all for it, and they're going to have it in their bill. So if you have a conference committee where the House has it strongly, almost rock solid in their bill, and the Senate... we could have it in the bill, then it's done. If we don't have it in the bill, there are 54, 55, 56 Democratic senators for it. How are they going to report back a bill without it?
The only people who aren't for it are the American people. And according to him, it isn't the government, but the insurance companies that are to blame.
The insurance industry is the most, the health insurance industry is so highly concentrated, there's no competition.
None at all.
And you need somewhere for it to come about. If you just say, we'll hope and pray the government can stop them from doing the things they do, that never works.
Wrong, Chucky. What never works is the government coming in and eliminating the competition. But even Schumer seems to realize that Obama is to suffer because of pushing this issue. Listen.
Everyone wants to help the White House. Here's what we realize. In 2010, like it or not, and most people like it, are, we're tied to Obama. If his numbers are poor, we're going to do poorly. If his numbers are good, we're going to do well. The bottom line is that we know we're tied together, but it is true. This is not just an aphorism. United we stand, divided we fall. So it's not a question of fear. It's a question of pulling together for the good of the team.
That's right, Schumer. Win one for the team, not for your country. Now we'll take your calls on the Savage Nation. Steve in San Francisco, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, Michael, I was just telling your screener there, I got banned from a local restaurant this weekend for what they call a hate speech, for defending you and freedom and liberty. They told me to take my politics and leave. And then they
Great. What kind of restaurant was it?
You want to know the name?
No, just what kind of food?
Oh, Italian.
An Italian doesn't like conservative talk?
They both graduated from your alma mater, Cal Berkeley, the wife and the husband.
Oh, that's not Italian food. That's pseudo-Italian food. It's ersatz fraudulent Italian food. I can guarantee you that your grandmother cooked Italian food. These people are cooking what you call California Italian food, which is fake from top to bottom.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic, but I just...
Well, what is it, $19 for a plate of spaghetti?
It's all watered down. You have as much pasta as you want with your main meal. It's like...
I bet you they don't serve meatballs because that's too low class.
Absolutely not.
How much is a glass of wine? $9 to $16 a glass.
Drink a beer, bottled beer is $3.75 a bottle for just a bottle of Coors.
Well, what were you were you insulting someone when you were talking or what?
Yeah, there was the high school I went to was I graduated in 1980. I'm 47 years old, and the class of 81 came in, a bunch of people, like 30 of them, and I hadn't seen them in a long time, and.
Were expressing your political opinion. Did anyone complain?
Well, that's what he said. He came up to me a couple days later. He tapped me on the shoulder on Friday night, and he called me outside, and he said a guy named Russ, who I don't even know, complained that you used the N-word on the President of the United States inside the bar on Friday night.
Well, and did you?
I said, absolutely not.
You had a fellow graduate accuse you of using the N-word, and this idiot in the restaurant said you can't come in my restaurant because of a false accusation?
He was on the side. He kept telling me I'm lying. Every time I said I would not say that about the president.
I'll tell you what we're going to do for you, Steve. You're going to send me – wait a minute. Is this in San Francisco?
I'm actually in Pleasant Hill. It's east of San Francisco, about 25 near Walnut.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Send me the name of the restaurant and the incident by email, and I'm going to hire you an attorney for free, and we're going to sue the owners unless they apologize to you. How's that?
It sounds awesome, Mike.
Okay. I tell you, I'm doing that right now. You're sending me your name, the name of the restaurant, exactly what happened, and if it's what you say happened, I'm going to sue that restaurant. I'm going to have you sue the restaurant. I'm hiring you a lawyer, and we're going to make those two you-know-whats apologize to you on the air. How's that, Steve?
That's beautiful, Michael.
Why don't you call them up and tell them what's going to happen because of what they did to you?
You think I ought to warn them?
I think you should call them and give them an opportunity to apologize to you. And if they don't do it, you tell them that I'm going to talk about it on the radio until they do. And if the story holds up as you said it, we're going to sue them. And you could send my regards. See, I put my money where my mouth is. I help people who are trying to help me, unlike people in certain branches of the media. I believe in helping my listeners because they've helped me, achieve what I have. 1-800-449-whatever. I forgot my number. I don't even know my phone. For most religious, but for Barney Frank, this is when they really get it out of the in their life. Since Obama came to power and those two wonderful human beings got positions that they're nutting out through their hands, and wow, they say this is the days of gloating about a religious holiday without realizing he's saying days of AWE, meaning awe of God. But no, Barney Frank meant, I think, days O-R-E, because Obama and his minions, particularly Barney Frank
himself has gotten so much
he is a deep improvisational here without the neon lights behind me. I'm suffering here. I'm suffering this. It's supposed to be a production where you find it and press a button, and I'm up here All right. What a team. Like, I guess it was too big a weekend for them.
And I really feel a great sense of responsibility for Rahm and for me and for many others, the days between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur for Jewish.
That was last year. He was so thrilled with his finger in the till that he was talking already about God. Even he found God. Even he could believe in God for that. He was so happy with what had happened in his life. A schnook like him, a nobody, a marginal nobody wound up on top, that even he became religious for that period of time. It's Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
You saw me standing alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
This is the Savage Nation.
Blue Moon. Savage.